We started this series a couple weeks ago called Jesus Went, and basically we're just going where Jesus went. He went to several places on his way to the cross, but we started out in the desert. That was early on in his ministry. That's where he got tempted three times, and so we talked about that with three temptations of needing to fulfill your own appetites and having other people affirm you, and then having that need for power, that ambitious kind of thing where you step on people to get where you need to go because you don't feel like you're fulfilled with what God has given you already. Go back and listen to those messages if you need to. Last week we talked about a wedding, that Jesus went to the wedding. It was his first miracle or sign that John recorded for us. And we saw how he turned water into wine, right? Do you remember that? My only miracle is being able to turn wine into water. I'm able to do that. Okay. You guys did not get that one. Okay. But I think this has been a good series so far, and we're going to continue on. Today, we're looking at Jesus going to the outsider. Next week, Jesus goes to the place of shame. Then we're going to eventually wind up seeing Jesus go to the cross, the hill, the Golgotha, where he ultimately dies. But then glorious Easter Sunday, April 21st, we will see Jesus go to the garden as a newly resurrected Jesus Christ. So we hope that you journey with us all the way on that. But today, we're looking at a very familiar story. I hope perhaps, you know, in Sunday school as a kid, or maybe Bible school or something, you might have heard this story, and it's encapsulated in a song about a wee little man. And a wee little man was he. Do you know what I'm talking about? Zacchaeus. He climbed up in the sycamore tree for the Lord he wanted to see. Remember anybody? Yeah. You come down, for I'm going to your house today. Yeah, it had all the motions and everything with it. We'll have Carrie come up and do it here in a little bit. But Zacchaeus was the lowest of the low of the lowest of sinners. Now, in the Bible, at this point in the Bible, there was basically two kinds of people. There were the righteous and then the sinners, the unrighteous. They were people who were following the laws, who were a good religious people, and they showed up to synagogue, and they worshipped at the temple regularly. They followed the rules. And then there was basically everybody else, and there were sinners. Now, but the sinners had two categories, all right? So there was two types of people. There were sinners and the non-sinners. There was righteous, unrighteous. But amongst the sinners, there was another two categories. There were sinners, and then there were tax collectors, okay? The tax collectors were the worst. They were awful because tax collectors worked for the oppressive Roman government. The Roman government had come in, and they didn't really wipe out all the Jewish people, but they were oppressively dictating, lording over the Jewish people, and they would collect taxes on them using Jewish people to collect the taxes. Now, so all of these tax collectors were seen as turncoats, okay? They were working for the oppressive government. They were forsaking their responsibility as good Jewish, you know, righteous people. So they were the lowest of the low. They were on the outside. And here's the other thing. The Roman government encouraged tax collectors to take over and above what the people actually owed and see how much they could get away with. So they were encouraged to just overtax the people. How many of you feel overtaxed? April 15th coming up pretty soon. All right, we have a tax collector in the house. He works for an H&R Block. It's okay. No, I'm just kidding. I don't know if he takes taxes or not, but he helps you fill them out so you can get money back. But so what happens is they were encouraged to take more money than what the people actually owed, and then they could keep it for themselves. So they were getting wealthy off the backs of their brothers and sisters. Can you imagine how much you would hate that person if they had turned their back on you? They were collecting money for the government that you hated anyway. And then not only that, they were gathering a percentage more and keeping it for themselves. So these were outsiders. And here's another reason why they were outsiders, because if they were a good tax collector, they got very wealthy, right? They'd have lots of money. And people with lots of money generally don't hang out with people who don't have lots of money. They hang out with other people who have lots of money. This is why you guys are all here hanging out with me, because we don't have lots of money. I don't think any of us do. We're just hanging out. So the wealthy people hang out with the wealthy people. So these guys were not good people amongst, they didn't have the goodwill of the people. They were outsiders, all right? Jesus went to the outsiders. Jesus hung out with these people. He even chose one of those people, Matthew, to be amongst his 12, right? Matthew was a tax collector, and he got to join on the journey with Jesus. So when you think of the word outsider or the outsiders, what do you think of? What do you feel? What comes to your mind when you think of outsiders? What comes up? I have one on a different slide up here. Do you remember this movie? The Outsiders. Man, you got to see this movie if you're a little bit older and more mature. It was in the 80s, yes, but look who's in this movie. Like, Emilio Estevez was in there. There's Patrick Swayze, Matt Dillon, Ralph Macchio, Tom Cruise, all the guys who became, Rob Lowe. All these guys became somebody later on. If you got to watch this movie. How many of you seen it? Oh, yeah. Okay, so you know what I'm talking about. If you haven't seen it, go see it. It really expresses the darkness of being on the outside. I don't want to get into it anymore, but it characterizes the loneliness of the outsider, being a part of a people that nobody wants to be around. Who are the outsiders among us? Who are the outsiders in our towns, in our neighborhoods? I'm just going to suggest that those are the people Jesus would go to. Jesus would head towards the outsider, not away from them. Now, here's another question. Think about, hey, we're good church people, right? We're all here on Sunday morning. We come here to worship. We sing our songs, eat a donut, whatever. Who are the outsiders from our religious culture today? Who do we not accept or include in our bodies of worship? These are the people Jesus would go to. Jesus would go to their houses and invite them in to his house. And he would actually go to their heart and come into their lives. So here's the story. Luke chapter 19, 1 through 10. Jesus entered Jericho and was passing through. A man was there by the name of Zacchaeus. He was a chief tax collector and was wealthy. He wanted to see who Jesus was, but because he was short, he could not see over the crowd. So he ran ahead and climbed a sycamore tree to see him, since Jesus was coming that way. When Jesus reached the spot, he looked up and he said to him, "Zacchaeus, come down immediately. I must stay at your house today." So Zacchaeus came down at once and welcomed him gladly. And all the people saw this, and he began to mutter, "He has gone to be the guest of a sinner." But Zacchaeus stood up and said to the Lord, "Look, Lord, here and now I give half of my possessions to the poor, and if I've cheated anybody out of anything, I'll pay back four times the amount." And Jesus said to him, "Today salvation has come to this house, because this man too is a son of Abraham, for the Son of Man came to seek and save the lost," because when we get to be with Jesus Christ, we become one of the family of God. And he's saying he's not on the outside anymore. He's coming in here to our family. He's not on the outside anymore. Zach, though, up, I'm going to call him Zach because it's a lot easier than Zacchaeus. And I'm not talking about Mr. Zach down here on the front row. Zach, not this one, is the worst of all sinners. He's the worst of all sinners. He's a tax collector. He's a chief tax collector. And yet, he's this. There's a note on the back side. Even though he's the worst of sinners, he is still captivated by Christ. He's captivated by him. Jesus enters Jericho, passing through. A man, Zacchaeus, chief tax collector, wealthy. He wanted to see Jesus, who Jesus was. He wanted to find out who he was, so he runs ahead. He can't see, so what does he do? Climbs up the tree. He is so excited to see Jesus, he does whatever it takes to go see him. Now, Jericho was a gateway city. Jericho was a passing through kind of place. Jews from all directions would come through Jericho to get to Jerusalem because it was a waypoint that you had to take around Samaria, because there were people that they hated there too, and they hated the Jews. So people go around there and always have to come through Jericho. So Jesus was on his way to Jerusalem for the last time in his earthly ministry here on earth 2,000 years ago. So Jesus was on his way there the last time. Now, this is towards the end of his ministry, right? Last week and the week before, at the beginning. Now we're at the end. And Jesus is famous at this point. 3 years later from what we talked about last week, there's huge crowds following him at this point. He's got tons, and he's done just the 12. He's got tons of people that follow along because they're like, hey, this guy's going to do something amazing at any point. I just want to be a part of it. I love what he teaches me and he tells me, and I feel good inside because Jesus makes me feel whole and part of things. So people are following him. And it was kind of a circus around him at all times because there's just tons of people all around all the time. So Zac, he's really good at his job. He's a really great tax collector, and we know this because he's a chief, right? He's a chief tax collector. He might not have even had to collect taxes anymore. He probably had minions going out knocking the knees of the people and then to bring the money back. You know what I mean? So he was good at his job. He was getting lots of money. He climbed the corporate ladder. And now he's captivated by this spectacle. And Jesus is at the center of this throng of people. And Zacchaeus wanted to see what's going on. So I don't know. Do I have a picture of that tree? He climbs up this tree. Yeah, and there's this garden there around Jericho, and it's a sycamore tree. Yeah, I don't know if it's Zacchaeus' tree, but it's like the one people go to see. Like, oh, this is where Zacchaeus. I kind of doubt it. I mean, that's talking a 2,000-year-old tree. That doesn't look that old to me. But he climbs up this tree to see what's going on. Now, here's the thing. Grown men don't climb trees. Right? We just don't, unless we're climbing up there to do one of two things. We're either, men, this is, I'm just talking to men here. Men, let's be honest, you're either cutting down the tree, you know, that's why you climb up the tree, or you're going to go hide and peep, you know? So let's be honest, okay? You don't want to be seen if you're climbing up a tree. You don't climb up the trees to be visible. You climb up to hide. Grown men don't climb trees. So what was the motivation for Zacchaeus to do this? Was he interested in the man, Jesus Christ, and what he could do for his soul, or was he just wanting to see the spectacle? Was he just wanting to see, hey, there's this crazy thing going on in Jericho. I want to see something crazy happen. What's your motivation to come to church? Do you just want to see the spectacle of it all? Like, man, I got to play with the musicians today, but normally they're really good. And I love it a lot when somebody else is playing the bass and the whole team is here. I think it's fantastic. But that's not the only reason why I should come. I love having a donut over the table with somebody, sharing a story and laughing with people. I love that. It's fantastic. But that shouldn't be the only reason why I come to church. Sometimes somebody will say something. Like, we've had other speakers in here. Even things that I've preached are like, ooh, that's good. I need to hear that. You know, but that shouldn't be the only reason why I come to church. What's your motivation? Why do you want to be in relationship with Jesus? Is it just to see friends? Is it just to hear music? Just to see the spectacle? How captivated are you by Jesus? What would you do to see Jesus? To be a part of Jesus's throng of people? Would you climb a tree? Would you go up and do something completely ridiculous like climb a tree as an adult? What's your motivation? Zacchaeus was captivated enough to climb a tree and risk embarrassment by all the people around him. Who knows what they would have said if they'd have seen him up there. So he's captivated by Christ. And here's the second one. He's challenged by Christ. So when Jesus reached the spot, this is verse 5, he looked up and said to him, Zacchaeus, come down immediately. I must stay at your house today. So Jesus stops the entire parade. There's tons of people around, okay? And they're all just moving towards Jerusalem together. All these people around, all this stuff that Jesus had to do, he was on a mission. He was headed towards a place. He stops everything to focus on one person. Boy, when I wrote that down, I went, ugh, I need that. Stop everything. Focus on why you're here. Focus on one person. That tree Zacchaeus was in, they called that a sycamore tree. It has like these limbs that maybe hang out over the street or the road. And so it's long enough where he could have been hanging out literally over the road, not just straight up, but like over the road. So all these things that's going on, and Jesus stops everything and looks up. There's Zacchaeus hanging out over the road, and he stops everything and calls him by name. Here's the thing. Grown men don't climb trees, all right? They just don't do it, and if they do it, it's because they're trying to hide themselves from somebody else or something. You are never concealed from the all-seeing eye of Jesus. You can try as you might to hide whatever it is you're trying to hide from or do. Jesus can see you. But without being introduced, Jesus already knew his name, and he knows your name too. Knowing someone's name gives you authority over that person because you can call them out. And Jesus calls out Zacchaeus. Zacchaeus, you come down. And he gives him the challenge. I'm coming to your house today. I'm coming to your place today. How would you like that if Jesus did that to you? Hey, put your name here. Hey, I'm coming to your house today. And maybe not just your house, but I'm coming inside your heart, and I'm going to clean some stuff up. I'm going to challenge you, and you can't just stay up there where you are. Do we set ourselves up above where Jesus is? Do we need to come down from our high place in order to be where Jesus is? Maybe we just want to sit back and watch the show. I'm going to stay up here on this limb. I'm a little bit concealed. Most people can't see me. And I'll just watch everything go on from afar. It's just a show, and I don't have to participate in it. Jesus says, no, 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 no. Come down from your high place and join the show. You're going to be part of it. And now's the time where you're going to no longer be the outsider watching from the outside in. You are going to be in it here with me, with all the people. You can't just sit back and let everything happen around you. So what is the challenge for you? Where does Jesus challenge you or invite you to join him? We say this over and over here at Engage, is that your discipleship, your journey as a believer to become like Christ isn't just for you. It's not just for you to be holy or know things about the Bible or have songs in your heart. It's for the sake of others. You don't become like Jesus so that you can keep it to yourself. In fact, I would say if you keep it to yourself, you're the least like Jesus. Because by the very nature of becoming like Jesus, it's for the sake of others because he lived his life for the sake of others. Jesus continually challenges us to join him, to leave our limb and come down and join him where he is already working. We have the Love the 4-3-0-5-5 things coming up. You know what? That's about as least risky of thing as you can do to take pizza to some firefighters. It's not risky. Go rake the square. Not hard. Go clean up the main place. You know, that's not hard, but it's a way to be a part of what God's doing in our midst. We need you to be a part of those things, not so that the ministry can go on. Ministry's going to go on. Those things happen. We need you to join in because people are waiting on you to receive a blessing from you that only you can give them. Their lives can be changed because of you leaving your limb and coming down and being with the people where Jesus is already working, stirring in people's hearts. You don't even know. You didn't even know that what you would say or what you would do would impact that person quite like it does. But Jesus is already working ahead of you. Now he's waiting for you to come on down. Come on down and be with him. Thirdly, this is a connection to Christ. It's verses 6 and 7, connected to Christ. So he came down. Zacchaeus came down at once, and he welcomed him gladly. And all the people saw this and began to mutter, "He's gone to be the guest of a sinner." Ooh, Jesus, he's going to be a sinner's guest. So Zacchaeus happily brings Jesus home. Of course, this guy who's on the outside, he came to see the famous guy in the middle of the parade. And then the guy who in the middle of the parade says, "I'm coming to your house." Of course he's happy. He welcomes him. He's no longer an outsider. I'm one of the important people now. Jesus came to my house. However, a connection with Christ can cause problems. Because people might start talking about you. Or people might start to make you feel unworthy. Or they make you feel sinful and say, you cannot be accepted by Jesus because of the things you have done in your past. You aren't good enough to go to church. They won't accept you there. Who do you think you are? Here's the thing about Jesus. Jesus values people because people are people. Plain and simple. Jesus values you because you are a people. You're a person. He doesn't value you because of things you've done. He doesn't value people in accordance with how much they follow the rules of the church or the law of the Jewish people. He values people because people are people. Jesus wants to be in a relationship with you before you start following his rules. He loves you despite all of your junk. He loves you even when you're an outsider. Maybe he loves you because you're an outsider. We do good things. We love others as a response to the love that Jesus has already given us, not to gain it. Being challenged and connected to Jesus turns into this, being changed by Christ. Zacchaeus gets changed in verses 8 and 10 through 10. But Zacchaeus stood up and said to the Lord, "Look, Lord, here and now I give half my possessions to the poor, and if I've cheated anybody out of anything, I'll pay him back four times the amount." And Jesus said, "Today salvation has come to this house, because this man too is a son of Abraham, for the Son of Man came to seek and to save the lost, those who are on the outside." The law would have directed Zacchaeus to give back 20% restitution, but he was promising four times. That transformation is real. He wasn't just doing the bare minimum. He was doing more than the maximum. He was sincere. And Jesus defends his decision by saying, "I've come to seek and save the lost, not come for the religious people." In other passages, Jesus says, doctors don't come for the healthy people, but for the sick. Jesus came for those of us who are broken and who need his restoration. Long and short of it is, Jesus went to the outsider. Jesus went to the outsider. I've asked Sean Kuhn to come and give us a testimony. Sean, come on up and talk to us about times in his life when he felt like an outsider. And we're going to hear his story in kind of like two parts, because I've asked him to come next week too, and illustrate for us this idea of being changed by Christ and being on the outside. Mike, we're going to use this microphone over here. If I can get it out. This is Sean Kuhn.
Good morning.
It's on.
All right, it's on.
You got to eat it.
I got to eat it?
Yeah.
All right. Like my double stuff?
Yes, right.
Okay. All right. Well, first off, thanks, Rev. He gained that nickname when we were on the mission trip. Don't remember the whole story. You'd have to ask the girls. But no, I'm Sean Kuhn. I've been coming here since we started, you know, April 1st. My life, first off, you know, I grew up in Heath, graduated from Heath. Avid ball player. You know, I just figured you guys need a little background on who I am, how I was as a child. And so anyhow, avid baseball player, graduated from Heath High School in 99, you know, amazing upbringing, two great parents. One's here today, one isn't. But that's another story. So anyhow, I got involved with drugs a tiny bit in high school, but mostly after. You know, a series of events had happened from the time I graduated, first part of college. You know, my father got sick. In my head, I thought I lost scholarships for baseball. And so I chose to go down a dark path and got deeply involved with drugs, alcohol, the life of partying. But, you know, here today, you know, I stand here with just over 12 years sobriety. And so, you know, David asked me to talk to you guys a little bit about my story and when Jesus came to me. So, for me, from an early age, you know, about 15, 16, I just had this overwhelming feeling that I was put on this earth to help people. Never knew what capacity, ever, until later in life. Till I went through my journey, through my dark times, and then I felt like I was here to help others in my situation. You know, yes, people look at people in my situation when I was actively using and drinking as an outsider. They did. Just, that's natural with society. And, you know, that's how I choose to deal with my life years ago. Obviously, now it's a little different. So, anyhow, got sober, and I was just like, man, maybe this is my purpose in life, is to help others like me. Well, I do. And as naive as I was with that, I feel like I've been here to serve a higher purpose than just people in my situation. And I think I realized that when we went on this mission trip. So, you know, God came to me in many different ways. I pushed him out of my life for years after I found out my father was sick. And, you know, I guess I should say this. You know, I've never been a churchgoer, ever, until about a year ago. You know, my wife and I tried to find a few churches over the years that neither one of us could agree upon. And so anyhow, when my dad got sick, I pushed him away from me. You know, it wasn't that he left me, I left him. And so after I caught, my second and third felony, we were getting ready to go to a pre-sentencing trial hearing the next day, and I was standing on my mom and dad's front porch smoking a cigarette. And for the first time in, I don't know, years, I looked up to the sky and I prayed to God to help me. And I was so desperate for change in my life that I actually went back to him because I knew nothing else. Nothing else had worked for me. So for me to be able to find him again was a blessing, you know. That next day, yeah, I went to my sentencing hearing. I failed a drug test. I got locked up, put in handcuffs in front of my parents. But he did answer my prayer. Was the biggest thing. And looking back now, was I mad then because I got arrested? Yeah. But the biggest thing that happened for me was I got into a program that was called LMCCC, which is no longer around, and I got sober. So in hindsight, did he answer my prayer? think so. So having the ability to have that relationship with God and finding him again throughout a dark journey has been amazing, because I'm a spiritual guy. I've always been a spiritual guy, and that's what's helped me stay sober. But for many years now, I've been praying for a closer relationship with God. I walk into this church, April 1st last year? And I had an overwhelming feeling of, this is where I'm supposed to be. I've never had that before, other than when I got sober several years in, because it was a struggle. I don't know who knows somebody personally who's going through it themselves. I don't know. But that feeling of just your brain scattered and needing to rely on someone to help get you through those moments, I had to lean on him. I considered him my higher power. I consider him a little bit more than that today. God has found me in many different areas of my life, but I've also chosen in many different times to push him away. The more I resist him, the harder my times get. The more I love him, the easier times get. And, for me, being able to stand up here in front of you guys, I don't know half of you. I mean, I don't. Do I see you here? Yeah, of course. But on a personal level, I don't. But I do enjoy seeing every single one of your faces here on Sunday mornings. And I think that we're all here for a purpose. I think we're all here for a purpose to serve God in a higher way in this community. Because we do. Times are harder than ever in society. And I think we all have a purpose. And I think God has reached out to every single one of us to be able to be here, to be here for each other, to be here for our community. And whether or not we see that, I don't know. But I see it. Apparently Dave sees it in me. I don't know where he got it. But, I told Dave on the mission trip, thank you for being here for our family. Because it's tremendous. I mean, this church is given us so much faith, so much insight to God. Again, I couldn't tell you the first thing about the Bible, but I'm learning. My purpose here on this earth is to help others, and I'm excited. I'm excited to be here with this church to help provide assistance to those who suffer, not just on the alcoholic, drug addict level, but on a much higher level, to pass God's message along. And that's where I feel God has continued to come back to me and help push me into a better version of myself day after day. Dave asked me to keep it short and sweet, so I'm trying to keep it short and sweet. I don't know how much time I've done. So I told him I would not. I'd take all day if he'd let me.
Yeah, and you would. You would. This is an example of a life that's been changed by Christ. You each are an example of a life that's been changed by Christ. Here's what I want to say to you. You've heard the phrase before, hey, we need to take a little risk, like go out on a limb. Somebody went on a limb and helped him come to a point where he is today. Helped him. But here's what I would say to you. Come down off of your limb. Join in with what Jesus is doing in people's lives. Jesus has been working in Sean's life long before he ever darkened the door of this church. But because people are willing to get off their limb and be a part of his life and his community, he's been able to take big steps in the last 365 days. Big steps spiritually, emotionally, seeing his potential and being able to help other people's lives be changed by Christ. Don't be afraid of the outsider. Don't be afraid of them. Include them in so that they're insiders too. Because Jesus goes to the outsider. Jesus went to the outsider to include him, to include Sean, and to include you in his ministry. Can we celebrate one more time what God's doing in Sean's life? you have anything else you want to say?
If there's anything I can do any of you, to help any of you guys, all you got to do is ask. You know, whether it's help get someone sober, help you in your everyday life to be a better version of yourself. That's what I'm here for. You know, that's what Dave's here for. That's what we as a church are here for. So, you know, like I said, anything we can do, let us know.
Amen. Hey, let's pray. God, we thank you for the opportunity to be here in a place where lives are being changed. And all we got to do is just let you work and present ourselves as people who are willing to allow you to work through us. So help each of us to come down off of our limb and join you where you're already working and move with you into our streets, into our communities, into our neighborhoods and beyond, into our state and our world. God, be with us. Be with Sean as he deals with this every day, being caught in the grips of addiction and now being transformed in the image of Christ. We have many among us who share that burden. God, be with all of them as they work on being closer to you and allow you to change their life because of their belief, their trust, their hope in you. And Lord, that prayer goes for all of us. Continue to change me into the image of your Son for the sake of others. Continue to change all of us and transform us so that we become like you because of what your Son, Jesus Christ, has done for us, through us, and in us. God, be with us as we leave here today. We're going to go to work. We're going to go to school. We're going to go to places where those temptations come up all the time. Help us to remain with you and have you give us the strength to see through each day. Be with us as we go from here today. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen. God bless you all this morning.